Home of the world.
Yeah, I'm interested in this idea of home in the world because, and it'll come up a little bit later as well, because I think there is a kind of re-enchantment with authenticity that's being produced by the market in relation to this idea of the international new emerging art scenes, which I think is very problematic in relation to how we think about the drama of identity, as we were discussing yesterday at the Tate, with Kojo and John were discussing with Mark, in relation to Stuart Hall's ideas of belonging and culture. You know, because I think this sense of whether you're an immigrant or whether you are from India, this relationship between both places is continuous, and forms of exclusion and questions of belonging are, you know, we exist with these questions wherever you are located. The emerging questions that one gets in Europe, in Germany, France, Britain, Spain, wherever, is the question that that I and Kojo always face, is where are you from, where are you really from? This is becoming increasingly irritating, and people who might have once checked themselves with a sense of political correctness, which for me means just thinking a bit more about what you say, now unchecked, come out with this kind of rather policing question, which is, looking at you with these strange eyes, thinking, what are you going to talk about? Which is, this. So I'm interested, in this idea of home in the world, but I want to take it out of the Tagore sense and kind of think about it metaphorically. When I was there, I think what struck me the most is that Tagore's image abroad isn't actually as interesting for me as his project to create Shantiniketan. And the criticisms and the exoticization and the self-exoticization that I think, and the performed self that he produced in order to raise money for the school, I think, and his lionization by liberal and sympathetic Westerners is frankly, I think, uninteresting in the context of how Shantiniketan and the visions for Shantiniketan. Because it is quite unlike Dartington or any of the other Western experimental art schools. I mean, there are no forced, performative, progressive, liberal attitudes going on in Shantiniketan. There's nobody trying to dance naked with each other and all of that.
We
just want to say we didn't actually.
You saw that.
I missed that class.
Before your time,
actually.
Thank you.
Yeah. And in fact, Shantiniketan is a rather formal school, and the faculty are rather normal. And the goals of Shantiniketan were particular and contextual, as we've been discussing. What is interesting for me is that despite Tagore's differences with Gandhi over nationalism, what happened during the Gandhian era and the struggle for independence, and what becomes more tangible for me as I get older and reflect within my own family, who were part of making this extraordinary era, is to chart what Leela Gandhi describes as a ahimsaic historiography, ahimsa meaning non-violence. And I'll just quote from Leela Gandhi. I think it's from Affected Communities. Ahimsaic historiography, it turns to the colonial encounter not for evidence of violence and conflict or exotic mistakes, but rather in search for small subjugated narratives of cross-cultural collaboration between oppressors and oppressed, concerned with a visionary commitment to the end of institutionalized suffering. I think that for me this idea of violence and non-violence has a relationship to the way that we construct ethical practice. I think this is one of the things we were talking about on the roof that night, is how we build a kind of, and it might be interesting maybe if you could just a bit later go into that. So it is very interesting, because it was incredible to kind of be in Shantiniketan, this kind of halcyon image that I had in my mind. It's the second time I've been there. several of my members of my family have gone there to study. You know, this green, you know, beautiful campus feels under threat, you know. And it is interesting to think about, you know, Shantiniketan, you know, and how it operated with a sense of interiority, despite Tagore's performance as an international persona. How it, as a space, did not require visibility or need and require the production of authenticity in the way visibility operates now in the neoliberal contemporary Indian art scene, producing charming, authentic gatekeepers who, armed with acceptable global vocabularies, produce similar banal artworks to impress Western curators, who can say anything about India that impresses, anything to mystify, anything to make money. Mm-hmm. Now, that might seem a very strong statement, but that's just how I feel. without any sense of social responsibility. You know, this kind of new scene, the Delhi Art Fair, has emerged without anything, you know, and it's very much part of this kind of neoliberal spaceship that I believe sits over India right now. So what is sad in this sense is this green idyllic home for the cultural exploration that employed a distinctly anti-Western and decolonizing ideology now has to cope with the vulgarity of the Indian contemporary Delhi art scene and all that follows it. The context for Shantiniketan, of course, one of the other things that I'm very interested in researching in a broader way, is the context, which is the context of decolonization and self-determination, allowed for forms of decelerated attention to the relation between the temporal space of the rural and the temporal industrialized spaces of the city. There was an analysis of culture going on in culture itself, and there was a desire to reconstruct and revive culture following the departure of the Brits. This was a proud era in the 40s, 50s, and 60s in India, and there are many there were many examples of efforts, such as the cottage industry movement, to introduce the city to the village and the other way around. Mm-hmm. These movements produced articulations of a cultural ethics determined by economic models for self-dependency, which are again being vaporized by the accelerated culture of neoliberalism. So I'm kind of interested in how Shantiniketan as a space, even metaphorically, was able to withstand and stand apart in its own temporal space, and how this metaphor works in relation to different temporalities within India that coexist or do not coexist now. I think this idea of how we begin to gaze back at India having left is part of an ongoing post-colonial intellectual project, but I think the further challenge involves looking at the neo-colonial process and its infections in South Asia. I think what I became kind of what keeps resurfacing in my mind is the way that Shantiniketan architecture was constructed, how Tagore wanted to kind of people to, you know, enter a building and for the window to look out onto nature. This sense of the windows in the Shantiniketan architecture that look onto the landscape as a way to incorporate it into one's spiritual and political body. Mm-hmm. And I've become, you know, I'm interested in how that landscape, Indian landscape, now is incorporated in relation to these giant, horrific towers that are built on slum land all over Bombay, that have been, this land has been ripped from old communities of people who are described as slum dwellers, I mean, that we talked about a bit in our film What to Live too, and it's, you know, just increasingly shocking and awful to me, just the appearance of these giant Terminator buildings that literally gaze over the pollution so you don't have to smell the shit. Because I love Bombay, because when you open the plane doors, you smell the shit. And you don't anymore. Right. It's palm-fringed highways for neoliberal twits. These are kind of images that we're thinking about in relation to this new film. possibly new film, and how Otolith 2, and Kojo was going to talk when I finished a little bit about Otolith 2, the film we made in Bombay before. So, you know, neoliberal, neocolonial India for me is a, like a giant invisible spacecraft that sits on top of India in the way that settlers sit on top of Palestinians in Hebron. The spacecraft sucking the resources out of the soil and reaffirming caste divisions in a way that are producing forms of slavery that are not been produced before. How neoliberal culture, and now, what, and I'm also very interested in this idea of the five-star hotel perma-smile. How neoliberal culture involves franchising an idea of India out to Western companies within India who produce an India which is an easy drift through India, you know, for these neoliberal guys, bankers, hoteliers, miners, whatever they are, and how these they can have a kind of dérive through India, through these five-star hotels who are selling India to them as this land of tigers, land of Ayurveda, land of this, whatever it is, you know, getting, hiring beautiful Assamese, you know, Nepali women and men to work in the hotels who will perform sexual favors at the drop of a hat, who, when you question them and ask them for their opinion, they just, they're like robots who just don't know which way to move, you know. And, you know, I'm very interested in this franchising of an idea of India out to, so it's a kind of accelerated Occidentalism, but quite different to the kind of Japanese Occidentalism. And, yeah, I think, you know, one of the beautiful things about the era of decolonization was this question of how to produce, how to decolonize oneself. And I think this comes back to this idea of, this is something that Leela Gandhi talks about a lot, is how to spiritually transform oneself. And I think this involves a political responsibility to decolonizing oneself from caste as an aesthetic and political challenge. And that is something which does not exist in the contemporary art world in India now, at all. And yeah, these are some of the things that I was thinking about.
Okay, well, if you don't mind, I'm going to keep thinking, and if you respond throughout the day, just like what I
just said. But I just wanted to tell them a little bit about something too.
Maybe a bit later. No, I just need to put it together. Let me hear from my
kids. Were you going to show us some images?
You have four images.
Just four images.
Yeah, and I've got a nice picture of tension. Do you want to?
Yeah, let's do it.
So these are some images. I was trying to find images in Shantinikethan of some of the early construction of some of those buildings, and people kind of looking out from those buildings onto nature, which at that time was quite flat. There weren't so many trees there. Blah blah blah.
Actually, I noticed on YouTube the other day, there was a huge thing called Santal pop music.
Santal?
Pop music, contemporary, which is like kind of Santali, ghastly, sentimental, love pop songs. I just wondered if that would be part of what you're talking about.
Santali pop songs.
Yeah, really,
this
they
is
are.
Interesting. We talked about this a little bit.
I think there are dozens of them on YouTube.
Really?
You can find one or two of the old songs, but dozens of these kind of.
Because I'm not sure that the Santalis and the Adivasis are so involved in kind of franchising.
Yes, I'm just wondering about that.
No, they're not. I mean, in fact, the Maoists, the Adivasis who have taken arms. Who kind of constitute the Maoists in the...
But there's a very interesting...
They're very... It's a very complicated...
...where Sheena Gowdo about this, actually, this Hacking piece, which talks about how Adivasi groups somehow play up to these notions of the tribal, but they do it in a very interesting...
But these aren't tribal, these are kids' love songs.
But they're coming from Santali people.
That's what they're called, yes.
Right. Who are like a tribal group. So.
I was trying to find the traditional stuff, my technique is not.
Should we turn the lights up just so you can see the old lovely images there?
Do you want to direct me? I can ask. And so, actually, these came. One of the things we did was we went to. Unfortunately, we didn't have enough time in it because we in a rather bad organisational manoeuvre, found that we were there at the time of a holiday. Period. So lots of things were shut.
Yeah.
So it was the festival of
Saraswati.
Yeah.
It was Saraswati festival.
But so we didn't have enough time in the archive. But luckily, Anjali, and I think also Ilona, you were also working with to find some images for Vivian and Natasha, so that we got some information out, didn't we? Which is great. Anyway, over to you, Anjali.
Well, I mean, I just found these images. Maybe Grant can remember what this is.
Maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe you just tell us why it's.
So I think this is one of the buildings. It's one of the early images of Shankar Niketan as it was being constructed. I mean, you know, this is it looks like a kind of mixture between a kind of Indian temple and a kind of Japanese.
Isn't this one of his houses?
Yes, yeah,
it does look like. Yeah.
I think it's the biggest.
The first one. Yeah, the whole family here actually resided.
But as you can see, there's like this. Because you know, I think one of the the divisions that were produced in India during colonization, casteism was affirmed, because there was so much divide and rule that the people who were in the cities had no relationship anymore to nature. You know, the upper classes still don't know how to use their hands. You know, this is another reason why I'm not that interested in the contemporary Indian art scene, because I think there's a libidinal failure. And I think Tagore was interested in libidinizing, artists, people, you know, that was a kind of part of the spiritual political process. Was a kind of maybe, yes. So that's a whole other subject. Maybe we could have the next image. So you can see that at this time Shanti Niketan was quite empty. There wasn't anything.
It looks pretty different.
It looks very different. Yeah.
Well, do we know when these were from?
I think 18. No.
No, it would have been later.
19, whatever, 20 or something. I only had 20 minutes to choose these. So then, the lovely Indian barangas.
What chance is this? Is this the?
It's the main.
I think it's the white house.
The white house. The first one that is like the first one we came to talking about with Anjana when we were touring around his houses down the road from the island.
Okay.
And I mean, now, you know, literally there's a whole, you know, the campus obviously was growing at this time, you know, grew, and then, you know, the city of Bolapur, is it?
Yeah,
Bolapur. Attaches itself to the campus.
Yeah.
And the kind of division between the campus and this village, Bolapur, small town.
It's sort of continuous.
Yes, and now continuous. Yeah. It's very interesting how Shanti Niketan then figured on the kind of tourist map. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a whole other issue, it's a whole other subject.
Is the region Birbhum? What is Birbhum in relation to Bolapur and
Birbhum?
I think that's slightly farther over.
It's farther over.
Yeah, but there is a connection with temple. Because he owned it.
Oh, you mean where he had his estates, his family estates.
Yeah.
This is one bit of land, and then there are these family estates in another part of Bengal, which is now Bangladesh, I think.
Mm-hmm.
That's my memory.
Okay.
So I think this was leased to his father or grandfather. Father or grandfather? And he inherited it, just this area of Shanti Niketan.
Mm-hmm. Next.
Mm. That's where we all want to be. Mm. Yeah, but yeah. So I don't know. I think of these as they're just images that that stay with me, just gaze onto nature. I think this film by Peter Greenaway, Windows, has always we were thinking about this when we made this film Nervous Rerun in Palestine, in Jenin refugee camp. People looking out from the windows of the camp onto the scene. And I'm I'm sort of, it's just staying with me, it just stays with me in relations. And I'm still figuring out how this might work to get access to one of these tall buildings and film from there. Later. So this is the lovely opiated tension. Who loved his opium?
He loved it.
I thought I should put it in the little collection of five photographs. There's a photograph of him. There are not that many photographs of him. I mean, they were in the Tagore house, but they're all green and flaking.
Tenshin Okokoro.
Okokoro Tenshin, this Japanese curator.
Artist.
Predecessor of a kind of Muhammaru type, Jeev Sethi type.
He was the... One of the things that I was in... there's a number of things for me that come up with these images and what you've said. And I think that what you just said was extraordinary. There are lots of very interesting, threads to follow. But two things, I guess. The first thing is the site of Shantanikator. We spent some time talking with Anjuman and Sanchayan as well. About the gentrification of Shantanikator. So that actually when you walk around, you can see the kind of high-class apartments emerging. And he talked a lot about the way in which the local students were asked to caretake these rich houses during the time when the people weren't there, because they were either wherever they were. I mean, they were on these blocks in Bombay.
Yeah, Shantanikatan is their kind of house, rural
retreat,
holiday home.
Exactly. Yeah. But or down from London, down from Kolkata kind of situation. Yeah. But it is interesting to think. We began to talk a little bit about the land rights, and actually, this is something that was in. The exhibition we saw, Sanchayan Ghosh, at Experimenta in Kolkata was also looking into these things. He actually had a land registry in the exhibition that was a colonial land registry.
Which he might bring to Berlin.
Which would be great. But one of the things that's clear about that, and Anshuman, and you were talking about these boys, usually boys that were caretakers, and you were saying the Kolkata boys wouldn't take the job because it would ruin their reputation. They could be university teachers, university students, and caretakers. Whereas the local Bolpur boys would do it.
Yes.
So there's kind of this casteist relation played out in the maintenance of these. This developing gentrification.
And the lack, I mean, in India there's no kind of dignity in labour.
Yeah.
So you don't really, I waitressed for, cooked in restaurants for 10 years.
Yeah.
Since I was 16 to earn my money.
Yeah.
And, but if I told people that in India, suddenly I was considered to be a scumbag, poor failure.
You drop down the register.
Yeah. So I always told my family very proudly.
There's something interesting that you said, I think, about this home of the world trope, when you talked about the interiority of Shantanikatan.
Yeah.
And its lack of the fact that we need to have visibility in this way that we now understand as sort of, internationalism and cosmopolitanism. In terms of art, is this notion of visibility, and I thought it was really interesting because, in a way, that was kind of partly the Tagore model was the cosmopolitanism where universalism was located within these kinds of experiences, like the ones you describe, like looking through the window into the garden.
Mm.
Yeah, these kind of the sort of small.
Onto the horizon.
Yeah, these kind of small. The kind of scale is completely different, and the way you described it was very kind of elegiac, and it sort of made me think about how that could become, how an artwork could communicate that concept in a way that's rather difficult to do in words or something. And so I thought that was really, really interesting. And then you use the word spiritual in a way that I think also I can sort of relate to in terms of like a sort of Foucauldian notion of spiritual, which would be about the notion of self-transformation.
Self-work.
Yeah, self-work.
Which was about decolonization.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Learning about others
yeah.
in your country, from the villages that you'd have no relationship to.
Yeah.
You know, making that your political and aesthetic and social and, you know, challenge.
And that the gaining of knowledge is about transforming the self.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is something that Leela Gandhi, as you say, well, she
yeah.
spoke about in Stockholm, and maybe she will speak about them when she comes here.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
She, Leela Gandhi also talks a lot about, talks in detail about the concept of the imperial periphery, so how you might work at the imperial periphery. And her particular interest in these figures who she says work at the imperial periphery, so between the imperial and the... And the decolonized self, or learning about how to, how to work that edge, in a sense, I think it's like quite interesting. But I was also struck when you were talking about the ways in which, I mean, you talked about Opokora as being a kind of Hu-Han-Ru figure, but actually I'm wondering whether it's not Tagore who is the Hu-Han-Ru figure, in a sense, because one of the things that I was really interested in and wrote a bit about before we went to Shantanikatan was the using Spivak, actually, looking at the way in which this figure, Tagore, moved around the world doing these lectures to fund Shantanikatan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so this kind of relationship, which is another home in the world relation, but it is a strategic relation, and you've talked about it.
And I was thinking about the performance of Gandhi as a, like Akhil Vilgrami talks about Gandhi as a modernist and as an anti-modernist.
Mm-hmm.
So this performance, you know, there's a lawyer in South Africa who's lived in Britain, gone to LSE, you know, particularly to LSE, right? And where did Gandhi study? But he was in Britain for quite a while. Anyway, he was in his autobiography.
And then went to LSE.
Ambedkar went to LSE, but Gandhi was here. Anyway, he was just, you know, wearing European clothes and stuff. You know, how does this man then start to wear a dhoti? And it was to kind of, you know, again, to get rural people enchanted with themselves, you know. It was a complete performance, and it worked to also destabilize the British, you know,
horror nudity.
Yes, I mean all kinds of things. Yeah, yeah, because
and also encouraging people to weave their own.
And weave their own.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, Victorian colonialism, like as we are, you know, we were discussing the other day in terms of these like leftover laws on, you know, anti-homosexual, whatever laws that remain edicts. You know, really, yeah, they were kind of. There's a lot that came. There was a lot that was destroyed. By the colonials in South India, a lot of texts by women poets who were, you know, all kinds of, you know, India was, there were periods when it was a quite sexually liberated society.
Mm.
So there, you know, I think Gandhi's, you know, performance as such served to undermine these ideas, these regulations. But also I think Tagore was also performing in a way.
Hmm.
You know, I don't necessarily think he believed them. I mean, he was making $700 a lecture, which is more than we get.
Yeah. Sometimes
Particularly,
you just mentioned Spivak. Will you talk about her essay on Tagore and the ethics of pedagogy?
Yeah.
You see, the point is that Gaffer actually does this work herself. She teaches
Absolutely.
Basic language.
Yeah.
And is that just a performance, or is that, you see, because I can't imagine what that would be in the art world in the way you criticize it actually. And I think that's something that you're absolutely right to do, and you need to keep on coming up Because but there's a vast difference between Spivak's step into the school and teaching basic language for nothing.
Yeah.
And trying to do the right thing in Jenin, for example.
Yes, I completely agree.
There's a vast difference.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's the question we have to keep putting to ourselves, really.
Absolutely.
Which is that's the part where I think the kind of radical art school is ridiculous, really.
Yeah.
There you are.
I completely agree. And I think that the this relationship that Tagore has, the performance that you, or I think I would call it a kind of a strategic self and a tactical self or something.
Yes, I heard her talking about that at
the
launch of the Pre-Met thing from Kingston and Spivak.
Mm.
And actually what got annoyed people about it was that she was performing a relation too.
Mm.
And they couldn't bear that. She really performed a relation to for them, so they suddenly could no longer hold on to her as a difficult philosopher.
Yeah.
It was fascinating to see how those blokes, you know, continental philosophers, cringed.
Because she was just teaching.
Because she was performing.
Yeah.
A woman Indian just teaching.
Mm.
But that's very real, that is.
It's,
you know,
it's very real. No, no, I'm saying that's what's wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think she's very pragmatic about these different situations.
Yes, but here she performed it, that's what I'm saying, and that they found unbearable.
In her sort of articulation.
She's at Kingston, but it's also the context she's talking in. She's talking at Kingston in this, you know, this kind of, this hot house of continental philosophy, post-continental philosophy.
Of whom she's a sort of princess, and then suddenly she's completely unavailable to them.
But I wonder if Tagore does the same thing as he does these lecture tours, because the other thing that struck me when I was reading this about Spivak talking about this through Tagore, or writing about it, was the obvious, I mean this is going to sound a bit simplistic really as an analogy, but the obvious relationship between what Tagore was doing on his international lecture series circuit and what many of us do in the art world. Yeah. And of course this veers on the relationship that we might have to what you're suggesting is the kind of New Delhi art fair art world, you know, which might be in New Delhi or might be in London or might be somewhere else, this kind of the superfluous and simplistic product that sells in India to an audience that wants a particularity of that.
Yeah.
And Tagore is at this point for a long period and increasingly desperately and increasingly exhaustedly touring to raise money to feed back to Shantiniketan, which is in dire straits financially after when Tagore's family money runs out. So Tagore's family money runs out pretty quickly, and then he's at the behest of these international donors.
Yeah.
Which is very related, I think, to this, you know, to the, you know, that would be a similar situation as going into the Kingston,
It's similar to Josephine Baker, actually, going back onto the music hall to raise money for orphans.
Mm.
It's very, very similar thing with someone who both is central to culture and marginal to it. Josephine Baker in Lake Craig has to go back on the stage to raise money for her orphanage, and where she has orphans of every race in the world living in her country house. And it's a great film about that. A good film about that would be good.
Josephine Baker's Orphans.
I feel it might be Oscar territory. I can begin to feel tears rolling down my cheeks.
Oscar who?
Oscar BAFTA.
Oscar BAFTA.
Oscar BAFTA. So, but I think he was also trying to, you know, I think there is also this, these encounters going on, you know, that Ahimsaic historiography. Because I get stuck on the Ahimsaic, to use her terms, Ahimsa, this non-violent kind of history. You know, which Leela Gandhi talks about, these kind of these subjugated narratives of cross-cultural collaboration between oppressors and oppressed, concerned with the visionary commitment to the end of institutional suffering. I'm very, you know, I've always been interested in that because I saw that in my own, in my grandmother's life, you know, and their friendships with all kinds of people who wanted to see the end of colonial rule in India. And, you know, people's cultural commitment and political commitment to that and their love of India, which, you know, a kind of shared desire to see that, the end of colonial rule. And I experienced that love, you know, profoundly from some of her friends, be they kind of crazy Quakers, to theosophists,
yeah.
to music teachers, to political activists, all kinds of different people. So I think there are many points at which we can begin to... It's such an unrecorded history.
Yeah, and it's very generous of Indira Gandhi in a way to sort of allow all of these, you know, British subjects into the story of kind of decolonization, where, you know, and particularly in a way to mess it up by making the subjects that she chooses to record all these sort of slightly crazy ones, you know, the vegetarians, the homosexuals, the theosophists, the feminists. So I think it's a really interesting move in that story of decolonization.
Yeah.
And she includes Tagore in that, and his friendship with C.F. Andrews.
Yeah.
And
the other one we can't remember now.
Yeah.
Did he make copies of it?
I don't know, actually, I don't know. But Carpenter's definitely in one of the people that she talks about in the book.
Any other thoughts on what Angela's brought up? If not, I suggest that we break for coffee and a snack.
Thousands of thoughts about what she's brought up.
No, but we can let them percolate across the day. Angela, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Angela.
That's
great.
Thanks
very much.
Yeah.
So we've got